Hello guys, welcome back to Oslo. And this is our 8th episode of Meet the Experts. Last time we spoke about the extension kit. This time we're going to talk a little about two new patterns that we're using, the Embracer and the Functional Aggregator patterns. And today I got with me Thomas Hellstrom and Henrik Haraldsen. So if you guys could kind of start with you, Thomas, could tell a little about what you're doing here every day.
Okay.
What typical day in your life is about?
Sure,
at
work at least.
At work. Oh yeah. So when we do these, we do both videos and we do podcasts. So that means that, and I think for this episode, we're most likely going to use the whiteboard and do some drawing. At least I will, and make sure that you know we talk to them. Otherwise, guys listening to the way home in the car is going to have a hard time following up. Anyway. Thomas.
Okay, my name is Thomas Hellstrom. I work as a principal engineer in the People Platform department. I work a lot on digital assistant, our Wanda. We have several names for her here in our office. I work on the self-driving ERP vision to find ways to automate things in our product, make things smarter using machine learning and that part. So that's my main job here.
Yeah.
Yeah. My name is Henrik Halvorsen. I work as a principal engineer in the People Platform team. Lately, I'm mostly working with Wanda, the digital assistant. The first focus was more on the like framework side of it, building like the fundament that we use to build our agents. I've also been involved with other projects in the People Platform. Maybe the most important part is the identity services. That's kind of an integral part of what we do now with development.
Yeah.
Also work with specific domains now, with the travel request chatbot. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Diverse things, so I really like it.
Yeah, so a lot of the stuff that we're looking into is actually kind of like the vision about how to create self-driving, and a lot of the things that we're working on and you guys are working on is toward that part, right? Like the like the reference projects is one good example that you'll be working on, and then the whole architecture. And that's actually what we're going to talk about, how this architecture helped driving that vision, right?
Yeah.
So we have these two patterns. So I think, you know, maybe if we start out trying to explain what these patterns is all about, and I said that I would do that, but I think one of you guys should actually do that, because I wrote about them, but maybe one of you guys can make a drawing explaining it, kind of like...
I can start on the drawing and explaining maybe.
Yeah, Henrik can...
Jump in whenever.
Yeah, I think we should do that, because you guys have actually worked on implementing it. Yeah. I think, so like any blueprint, right, so we have this blueprint of an architecture, how we would like it to look. But again, it's like when you're building anything, you get the drawings and then you have the construction, and there's always kind of changes because some things are just not practical.
Yeah.
And there comes some like latencies and performance issues into play.
Yeah.
So when we wrote up and came up with the patterns, they are more like a greenfield patterns, I would say. And then if we try to take it from the theoretically aspect, like how we think this should be done and what it does,
yeah.
And then look at how did we end up doing it, right? And then kind of go in and say, here we did this change and this because of this and this, you know. So we could do that way.
Yeah.
So people kind of get an idea what they're about,
how
they should use them, and how we ended up using them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'll use you guys to behind Thomas.
First I would say if you maybe should talk about what we call the Embracer pattern first.
Yes,
as you say, it's not a super academic pattern. It's very pragmatic, and its goal is very modern. It's about reusing and recycling existing software.
Yeah.
So one example is, for instance, our timesheet web service that has been working for a mobile app for several years. It's been used for integration. Why would you go out and re-modernize or rebuild something that works?
Mm-hmm.
And then we found the Embracer pattern that basically means you have, I'll put on the bottom, your ERP system with a timesheet. And in our case, this is a SOAP-based service, mm-hmm. So it's not super modern on business world. And what we thought was we put a layer called, don't call it the Embracer layer, you call it the domain API, which is basically trying to surface everything that's about something functional in a product.
Yep.
So in this case, it's timesheet. It could be anything else. What's nice about this pattern is that we want our clients to call our domain API, and we want it to be a public API. So it's a multi-tenant API.
Mm.
So we can have several several customers installations of an API. Most likely, this will be one in our public cloud.
Yeah. So what, so what you're actually saying, right, is that this is like a T1, like we call this tenant number one, right? And we have the domain API, and then you could actually have another tenant. Just draw it over here, right, to the right of it, ERP. But they would both go. This domain API is multi-tenant, and it will then find out what is there actually the right back office services to call. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So the multi-tenant thing is solved by using our.
So just a quick question. Okay. So how would these are patterns we talk about, but we do a lot of services as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is the domain API actually using to? What is services do we actually provide to allow it to go to the right ERP? Yeah.
First of all, there's one requirement, which is you need to use our IDS, the identity services.
Yeah.
And the identity services will provide the domain API with a user and a tenant.
Yeah.
So when you get in here, you know who's calling and what company they work for.
Yeah.
And that will use another service called the discovery service.
The disco service.
Disco.
Like
and now the disco service know which where the different tenants are.
Okay.
So if I come in as a user, I have a tenant, and the disco service say, okay, you go in here. This is the URL for this SOAP service. And then disco is actually solving the whole multi-tenant issue for us in a very nice way. Another thing, which is I think very beautiful here, if I may
complete
this part,
Sorry.
Is it's not only multi-tenant, it's multi-product. So I can add here, for instance, another product. Let's call it. Well, we have all the timesheet products in the company. We have the time and expense T&E product. So if they say we want to be a part of this as well, so we want, when people ask the domain API for timesheets, we also have a timesheet. Then they need to, well, they need to implement IDS to be a part of this, and they need to register in the disco, but that's more an implementation thing.
So.
They need to do the plumbing, because there's plumbing involved.
Yeah.
The domain API, we try to follow the enterprise document thinking that we want one concept for a timesheet in unit 4, and if we agree on that concept, then I need to do a lot of plumbing from business work SOAP service, because it's a bit old fashioned, it's got the wrong structure and what we want. I do the plumbing here, and time and expense can do the same, and a user don't even need to know which system the company is using.
Yeah, so what we're actually saying is that anything that comes in from the top and has a domain API is actually, don't need to worry about the back office solution, right?
No.
So on the upstream from the domain API, we have a nice JSON REST-based API following our standards, and then internally, it can go to anything.
Yeah.
SOAP services, it could actually be directed to some code and execute from within if you wanted to, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you can compare it with like a database driver, right? So a .NET kind of data runtime loaded, but databases. If you're Oracle, you use the same code to access, and you don't really care what the engine is. So we're essentially just saying these are engines.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of like the domain API.
Yeah.
And that's what. So when we talk about the Embracer, so I guess so originally the Embracer was also about, at some point, adding additional functionality. So you're saying if something new comes around, you should probably not add in No. In the engines, or the ERPs, or the whatever solutions,
yeah.
But inside the embracer. So that means it's a. But what we did here, actually, by calling it the domain API, it doesn't really lend itself towards new functionality, right?
So
why did we end up looking at it that way? Is that because we don't do we not expect, actually, from a pattern perspective, that we would add features to this? How do we see that? Or would we then do something else?
Also, I think it's nicer, since this is a public API,
and
it's accessible, we can go in and plug in stuff. So maybe not functionality around that is needed down in the backend systems, but rather on more like marketplace cloud services that we want to add in. That will be done on domain API without having to upgrade or going through a whole process of the backend systems. We also have the whole data pipeline is now going through the domain API if you use it in that way. And that means we can deal with it with adding functionality. Just trying to come up with a good example for TimeSheet. Could be.
What about if for example, you have these, I think. So you have you have the time and expense, which is an engine. We have similar time tracking capabilities within business world, right? But what if you all of a sudden were in, like the innovation stuff with location tracking?
Yeah.
You know, that would be sitting, that would not be in these applications.
No,
that would be a completely different service. So that's a good example.
Yeah. Right? So that will fit very well in with this system.
So what we're saying is that originally the embracer pattern, what we thought initially was that we would actually enrich that with feature functions as well.
Yeah.
But whereas we're saying, from a practical implementation perspective, it's more likely that we would place new functionality in new services and not put them in the application.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, but that doesn't mean that. But that really means that the domain API then becomes like an API gateway, right? It's about unifying how we access. So it is this driver.
Okay. And we can also see that this landscape under here will modernize over time, but slower than this. So we have maybe in the beginning we will have maybe 100 tenants installations that maybe we could provide for, and then this will slowly become one maybe. So we in the end we will have like one full multi tenant product of our business world.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, we need to have like a bridge to get to that point.
But that's actually a very good thing, right? Because what we are saying is that by abstracting the access out, we can do any remodeling, rewriting, reconstructing down beneath this to put domain API, and everything on top of it will run unaffected, as long as we don't break the contract.
Yes.
And the contract outwards is not this way, but it's upstream,
mm-hmm.
so it's easier to maintain. So you can actually pull all of this out and show in some new lightweight services, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah.
The only thing you change is the driver.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Nice. So, what's on top of that?
I've been mostly working on the bottom here, so I
don't know.
You can give it more
on the top. Please.
So I think it's a really good the use case that Thomas describes with like you have this old service. It's been proven. It works really well. And you want to surface that upstream, so you wrap it in the domain API layer. You get multi-tenancy, you get a unified API to the outside. But you might have other use cases, so if you kind of try to look a bit broader on who's consuming this, it could be, let's say you have a use case about a certain thing that let's say it's a digital assistant that needs to have a use case implemented. So it can use the domain API directly, of course, but maybe we want to abstract away some more functionality. That's where this functional aggregator pattern and artifact kind of is involved. So how this has been applied is that so you can have several domain APIs down here, right? Serving different features of your source system. And they all have EDs or enterprise documents that it standardizes on. But you might want to unify some of the use cases that you have that involve several domain APIs, like purchasing or something like that, that involves maybe customers and products. And how do you do that? You have all these domain APIs, then you can put something on top of this. What do you call it? It's using the functional aggregator pattern. What is named could be a bit more vague, I think, at least from the discussions we have had. It's been like, what is this? Is it a bot? Is it?
We can go into that when we go to the practical.
Yeah, so let's say I have a use case that will use several of these domain APIs to kind of orchestrate kind of a use case that you have. So this can call multiple of these known domain APIs to implement kind of or facilitate for a use case that these see fit for the outside world to have. Then you have these that functional aggregator orchestrating all this for you.
Mm-hmm.
So from a kind of when you look at what we have implemented so far, I think this is where things are a bit vague to us, but we kind of see where it fits, I think. And the idea is that this thing sits on top and it has its own DTO and API that it talks to the outside world. But the mission of this is to try to kind of encapsulate some of the maybe internals of the ERP, the internals of the domain API, try to simplify it as much as possible, that it fits a use case. And since this sits in the cloud, we can easily upgrade, make new versions of the API, try to fit in new use cases that we see.
Yeah.
And this is where, to me, it's really interesting when you go this cloud kind of deployment and we have this kind of system where you can easily adapt and try to reach the clients that calls this.
Yes, and you especially see it when the domain API gets quite small. So if it's just covering a very small piece of functionality or a business object, especially in the microservice world, we'll see also that it's counterproductive to the clients calling. So the clients maybe need 10 different APIs to call. And we want to make also an interface upwards towards the callers. So it could be a mobile app, it can be an agent or a chatbot. Anything, and we think it's a good idea to kind of facilitate that top layer in a different way than the data model.
Yeah. So what we actually have is that we go from complex accessing to more natural functional calling, right? Yeah. So down here it's all complex. It's legacy. It uses old technologies, and it's not. It's another standard, right? Then move on up to the domain API or the embracers. They kind of encapsulate all that for you for the programmers, right? So don't need to deal with that, and it gives you a nice interface. Then we move one more step up, and here, so we say enterprise documents, and you know, for anyone, that's our definition of objects. So there's another Meet the Experts podcast.
Yeah.
So we don't. That's a complete series on its own.
We don't
go into that right now. But there is a document structure for that. But these are very CRUD based, right?
Yeah.
So this is very targeted on individual documents or business objects, whereas the functional aggregator is about orchestrating, and then and elevating. So for an example, you get this. What we're trying to do is that you take a number of steps and essentially turn them into one transaction.
Yeah.
It may develop to tons of different calls down here, but up here there's just one call, right? And that's, of course, use case driven because we don't really know, right? It's like, you know, but again, as you guys were pointing out, so that's this, you know, we could go into that in a short moment. This can be like a bot, and it could actually be a chatbot. It could also be an agent. It could be, which is a bot, without the chat, it's very confusing.
There's also a kind of cool thing that came to me now, is that this can also work this way, that it kind of discovers what functions you have and adapt to that.
Yeah.
So if you're an tenant that doesn't have that domain API, maybe it can implement a flow that fits you, so it can kind of encapsulate that part as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But another thing that these guys can do, because there's no, when we talk about Wonder being intelligent, and we talk about intelligence inside the system. So there's Wonder's intelligence outside, learning about its users, and then there's intelligence inside, what's actually happening over and over, repetitive patterns inside the system. Yeah. And this is actually these guys that'll have to do that, right? That's where the intelligent inside functionality
is. I might call it bot capabilities.
I think that's a good term.
And also it's a good place to put the upstream notifications. So listening to events and surfacing them to the clients.
Yeah.
Which you don't do through an API. It would be the concern of the function aggregator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To notify when a due date has been reached or something has been approved or...
Yeah, but then look, there's a lot of different pieces. Then we all have messaging, all kind of pieces going on.
The technical battery assignment is, of course, rich.
A lot of moving stuff. So this is kind of what the patterns is about, right?
Yes.
And then we spent some time with Wonder and these different skills or bots that we developed. So how did we end up doing it? How did we actually? Because we kind of merged some of these things and.
Yeah, I can start out maybe.
Implementation.
Yes. So concrete. If you should do the whole vertical, I can start maybe on top since we started on bottom.
Yeah.
Should we take maybe you should take it away and
at least
give me some room for.
No. This is a very small whiteboard. We probably should find a room with a big whiteboard next time.
Bigger thoughts.
Yeah.
We should probably do like a system architecture 101 from the bottom up. The messaging and everything. So
I think to try to understand where it fits all these patterns and the kind of things we draw, we start from Wonder, I think, and we move downstream, as we usually call it. Yeah. So Wonder sits on top. So that's the digital assistant. And for those that don't know that, it's built on top of Microsoft's bot framework, so it can communicate with multiple social applications, Facebook, Slack, Skype, etc. And we have built some utilities for developers to build kind of chatbots that Wonder has, the capabilities that Wonder will have. So Wonder will So the idea is that Wanda is the front-facing digital assistant, and she will rely on multiple chatbots that serve basically a use case or a domain, or doing timesheet, capturing time, doing a travel request, figuring out like what's my balances, like simple things. And this layer is kind of what we call the Wonder ecosystem.
Yeah.
And this also has a lot of dependencies on external services. The driver here is LUIS, so Microsoft's language understanding service that we use to figure out intents and
entities.
Yeah. But we will not go into detail into that. So, this is the Wonder ecosystem, and then you have the functional aggregators surfacing under here. I'm not saying that one chatbot relies on one functional aggregator. It could do maybe multiple. We don't know yet. And from the drawing we had, we had the domain. And then you have the source system.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Thomas, do you want to add anything?
And maybe you could just use what you've been working on as an example.
So from an artifact perspective, right? Because when we look at it from a pure view, each of these, like the domain API, There's one domain, so domain, it's called a domain API because we look in purchasing, time and expense, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But each of these have their own microservices, right? That's the kind of like the pure view. Maybe even nano services, depending on how small they are.
Yeah.
Functional aggregators, again, would be like one service per piece.
Yeah.
And chatbots, again, would be one. So on an internal discussion we had the other day, Henrik was like, holy Moses, that's a lot of services. So we ended up like we made a pragmatic agreement on this one, and what did that turn into in terms of artifacts?
If you look at artifacts from this point of view, Wanda is purely just an API server that runs.
That's true.
And the chatbots is basically code that for now runs in Service Fabric, so a specific system that is in cloud to run code.
So they're like serverless.
Yeah.
Right.
In a, and this layer also has an internal messaging system to kind of.
Let's throw messages up. And, Yeah, so that's actually very good. So like one of the key pieces of our whole architecture is loosely coupled event driven.
Yeah.
And these are actually messaging. We don't use synchronous APIs. It's all based on async messaging by using a message sub.
In this case, it's all messaging with queues. So the artifacts of the functional aggregators is a bit more vague from what we have seen so far. So in our use case, a functional aggregator is an API server. It exposes itself as a web API, basically.
Yeah.
That's kind of, we had this early kind of, it should all be messaging, and that's the way to go in the microservice kind of world. But I think due to several aspects, we did like HTTP first here.
Just
it helps us kind of vision and pan out the whole architecture and what exactly does this mean? What will it be? What artifact? So it's an API server, but it might, and we have implemented things, but it might be something more. So Thomas talked about notifications.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a really important part with the chatbot is that it should communicate with you when something happens in the source system.
Proactive.
If you do the only downstream, it's interesting, but I think when you do the proactive part, that's when it is really attractive to people, that it helps you. And what we have done so far from investigating and how it should be is that it will basically be a service that runs. listening to messages from the source system.
Yeah.
So
it's actually the consume event from the source system.
Yeah. So what it is now is a web job, right? It's just continuous web job listening to events. And then it knows about clients it should send it to. And that's a part where we need more work because it should be agnostic to the receivers. So let's say that if you look at a travel request, kind of functional aggregator that I have been working with. One notification is that when the source system or your approver has approved your travel request, you will like to get notified.
Yeah, yeah.
So you as a user in the system uses the chatbot, so you want to get it in your chatbot
with
Wanda. But you might have other that want to get it in another source system or other system. So these events could take a U-turn and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
It depends, right, on the receivers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that part is, I think, interesting, and we need more work kind of understanding that part. So I'll not maybe talk too much about the eventing and messaging, but it is a shared message hub that's kind of the artifact there to get that working.
Mm-hmm.
So just say web job on this. So.
Thomas, something to add?
Similar, they're still a work in progress on the domain API side, which at the moment is hosted as a web app, REST API, which is nice and clean, but still you get a big JSON document that you need to deal with.
Yeah.
And if we'll see how the enterprise documents evolve as well, but it would be nice if you had a class or some helper functions. So most of our developers work in C#, and if you have like a, we could provide an SDK where you say like I want to talk to the timesheet and it does all that plumbing for you.
Absolutely.
And you get a typed class to work with instead.
Yeah.
So that's something we're looking at, but we haven't.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't use C#, you can do it with the APIs yourself. Right.
Yes.
So you can, if you use Java or PHP or
Python.
Oh yeah, Python. Use Python. Python. You just go with. Oh, unless we do an SDK for Python, we don't know.
Yes.
So I think, what we learned so far is that this layer is where it maybe gets a bit more fat, and we add things like. So.
But again, it's interesting, right? Because it seems like originally we were having this idea that the embracer being the main should be the one where we enhance the solution. But I think it's clear to us now that if we have to go back and relook at the pattern, it's probably the functional aggregator that will be the extender.
Yeah.
So if something completely new comes around,
where
we have the option either to put it into the legacy solution, or it's abstract, maybe there's no UI or anything to it, right? We will put it in the functional aggregators and not in the source system, right? Because it just doesn't make sense.
Yes.
And I think it's like a case by case. You have to look at what are you trying to solve. So one chatbot we have is working with the expenses. So you can talk to the chatbot, you can post a picture of your expense, and it will basically recognize what you have done or categorize your expense and try to send it through the system. So now we kind of orchestrate that a bit in the chatbot, but that could have been done in the functional aggregator as well.
Yeah.
Just having an API that takes the receipt and automatically classifies and sends it through
the
system.
Yeah, but that's essentially, so that's the point with the pattern is that you group a lot of actions and say, oh, just go do this, right? And then you'll give it all the input and you'll come back and say, I processed it, right?
But that's up to the developers, right, to try to figure this out.
And we started on this before we had fully discussed the patterns as well. So we ended up basically with this.
Yeah, you just read the blog, right?
Yeah. Your two names.
But it was this system is basically what is required to create the bots or chatbots in Wanda.
Yeah.
So we added all these artifacts because we needed them. And sometimes we got a bit too fat on this part, or too thin here, or too big there.
Yeah.
And now we're trying to kind of fine tune
the
responsibilities for each.
And
that's why we call it patterns.
Exactly. Patterns is just a way to think about a problem. It's not the practical implementation necessarily, right?
Yes.
So now we are finding, okay, we invented these patterns, right?
Yes.
As looking at some of the work done in trying to make a solution, a cloud solution.
Yeah.
And this is what we came up with. So we invented the patterns, and this is the practical implementation and recommendation on how to use it. And apart from actually, it has another distinct advantage, right? Of course, it lets you drive Wanda, and you build chatbots that use the functional aggregator. But third parties, customers themselves, our intern services folks, can use the same APIs, right? And that way, they don't have to deal actually knowing a lot about the underlying solution.
Mm-hmm.
They can focus on solely what is it I want to get done. To you, to what you mentioned, Henrik, just mentioned right before, I sit here, I'm a consultant, and I really want just to send you a receipt, and I want to track somehow, and that's the only thing you need to worry about. You can just do that, right? You don't have to find out, okay, what kind of software does the customer have? Does he use time and expense, or does he use business world time and expense? And like if you have financials or business world, what kind of financial solution?
Yeah.
This architecture is just nicely abstracting all that and let you focus on what is the process you want, what is the business process, what is it the user want to do.
Yeah.
So you add a lot of value. And this is also where the extension kit comes in, because the extension kit is constructed on top of all this and will essentially allow you to inject your own code like more like a function thinking, right? For example, you mentioned the example with an event comes up, right?
Yeah.
And you draw it on like the functional aggregator, but that could be an extension, right? It could be a customer created extension saying, if this event comes around, and you know, so it ties everything nicely in together. Yeah. I think this is cool, guys. Anything else we should
mention? Last benefit as well is not dimension, which maybe is obvious, but this is cloud architecture.
So right.
And so as a developer and as a team, you actually are responsible for releasing at your own pace.
Mm.
So we could have stuff that's kind of dormant and working, and stuff that are increasingly added on different release schedules, rapid development, and
But that also so that's really great, right? So I think we should mention this, and I think we have to mention this a couple of times, right? Because otherwise people forget, right? So it is cloud architecture.
Yes.
This is not in any shape or way find its way to on-premise. No. That's not the point. We're using, and we would be using, and everybody should use a lot of Azure services, like Azure Fabric and so forth.
Yeah.
And so we move into this. We don't deal so much with maintaining servers, we can just deploy code as our heart's delight, right, whenever we want to. And the only thing that's and that's a good thing about this loosely coupled architecture as a whole, is that the contract is not inside the code, the contract is actually at the interfaces, the externally bound interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
Which also have a rule internally now in the group saying no backward breaking, you can't break backward compatibility, that's just not, that's a no-no, right? So we need to keep that in mind. And if you want to, but that doesn't mean that you cannot have customers having their ERP solution on-premise, as long as they are willing to open up the DMC, or do reverse proxying.
And use IDS.
And use IDS, IDS is, it's not here, but IDS is key.
Yeah.
Fisco doesn't care what the services is. So if you use IDS and you have a reverse proxy, this will work perfectly well.
Yeah.
But this won't find its way to an on-premise installation. And Wanda and chatbots, that's just not possible because we're using Luis, which is, you know,
it's a
cloud-only service.
Yes.
And it would also give some throughput problem. So what do you feel about it? Now we kind of sketched up the pattern, I think a year ago, I came up with the first thought about this. And now we actually went through the process of figuring out, oh, we have these nice thoughts.
Yeah.
How does it work? Well, how do we feel? So now we kind of come to a conclusion and seeing some of this. So what do we feel about the patterns? Are the patterns, are they good in a practical way, or is that a good way of thinking about the problem this way?
I think it's a revelation as a developer to work in this way, because you feel so empowered on everything you do.
Right.
You're not limited, you just have opportunities the whole way. It's important to have some system in place, like we use continuous deployment or continuous integration a lot, because you end up with a lot of services. So that's kind of the main pain point, maybe, if you lose control of all of your how the services are connected.
Yeah.
And we are dependent on each other, so we need the fully functioned IDS, Disco services, and Luis and Skype, and we are dependent on a lot of services, so it's maybe a new paradigm for how you test your applications. And, there's some discovery needed, but as a developer, I think this is proven possible, very possible. We've had the good examples on how it works now, and it actually works.
it's been a really positive experience, I think.
Yeah.
Taking your code, you maintain it, you deploy it. And we actually have proven, I worked with IDS last year, spent half a year working on that.
Yeah.
Now it's always running, the sandbox that we have. Usually no issues with that, so it's really good to see that we have proven functions that run, it's reliable. And I think interaction between developers, they feel a bit more ownership when they do this, I think.
Yeah.
Because as far as my kind of experience, you have some guys working in discovery service. If there's an issue, you can just contact them and they fix it and redeploy.
Yeah.
From the past, you might see a bit more rigid and hard
not
to
my
operate.
so not I'm my really, problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave it to product services, by the way.
So it's a revelation, I think.
Okay.
It's really good.
Good. Thank you, guys. Anything else you want to add?
That's it, I think.
Henry always has to add to it.
I think people understand kind of the flow here now, but you might see communication this way as well, and you might jump this.
Anyways, thanks guys, thanks for coming. It was a pleasure, and you know, if anyone listening, looking at this, if you have any questions about the patterns, any questions at all, you can find Thomas's email address and his phone number, Ben's email address on the PEEP platform, u4pp.com.
Yeah.
on the team, and feel free to shoot an email. Sure. Thanks for your time. I hope you enjoyed it. Looking forward to meeting you to the next episode of Meet the Experts. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.